Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is May 11, 2014, or as if 13, 2018. We'll start our second service on this first day of the week with a song entitled, From Greenland's Icy Mountains. From Greenland's icy mountain, from India's coral strand, wherever Africa's sunny fountains roll down their golden sand, from many an ancient river, from many a palmy plain, they call us to deliver their land from their strain. But though the spicy breezes blow soft o'er Salem's Isle, though every prospect pleases and holdeth man his heart, and then with lavish kindness the gifts of Yah are shown, heathen in his blindness bows down to wooden stone. Shall we who so delighted with wisdom from on high, shall we to men benighted the lamp of love deny? Salvation, oh salvation, the joyful sound proclaim. Tell earth's remotest nation has learned Messiah's name. Off, off, ye winds, his story, and ye waters roll. Tell like the sea of glory is spread from pole to pole. The for ransomed nature, the lamb for sinners slain. The Redeemer, Queen Creator, in bliss returns to reign. Part 3, The House of God by Ernest W. Johnson. I call it the House of the Yahweh. That's for you folks out there. Stay up with who we're reading from here. We're reading from Ernest W. Johnson. And we're on page 8. And we're coming into the subject of prophetic events fulfilled. On page 9, but we're going to back up and finish up on page 8 with this here everlasting covenant that we got into. It says that let's look at the finding fault with him, with them. He said, "Behold, the days come," says Yahweh, "and I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." Okay, you have to put the house of Israel and the house of Judah back together. And that's Ezekiel 37, antithetical David. He's commanded take the stick of Ephraim out of the hand of Joseph, or the stick of Joseph out of the hand of Ephraim, one or the other, and to join it with the stick of Judah. And this is what antithetical Elijah is commanded to do when he comes on the scene. So when did Elijah do that? Elijah did that in 2002. When he admonished the king of Israel, now Richard Harder is the king of Edom. Ernest W. Johnson is the king of Edom. He's the antithetical Esauite that in charge of the kingdom. And so, being the angel of the seventh candlestick, Ruler Johnson was in charge of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, that is to bring forth the 12 tribes. So, they're claiming to have ownership and control of the 12 tribes. So the king of Israel, Royce W. Johnson, over the 12 tribes, he is the one that Yahweh is saying that for finding fault with them. He says, behold, the days come. What days are those? The days of the 12th hour, the latter days. Says, yeah, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel. And you go to Hebrews chapter 8 and read about that new covenant he makes with the house of Israel after those days and with the house of Judah. So Rollis Johnson is the president over the 12 tribes, sinful kingdom, as it were, the whole house of Israel, Israel and Judah. Okay. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Yahweh. I will put my laws in their mind and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them an Elohim, and they shall be my people. Hebrews 8, 8 and 10. Here we see that both Jeremiah and Paul made it plain that the church of the new covenant would be governed by the Yahweh's laws. And what's the church of the new covenant? The house of David. The eighth order. The eighth movement. And that's the last movement in this earth's history. And it takes place in the judgment of the living. It takes place in the harvest time of Earth's history here in the 12th parabolic hour. Okay. He said he's going to put his laws, all of his laws, and not by a set of man-made rules and laws. The church would be run by Elohim's appointed leader and not a committee of men. For further study on this subject, please read Amos 3:7, Matthew 24:42, and Matthew 44:47. In Revelation 7:1-4, Revelation 14:1-5, and Revelation 15:3, and Hebrews 8:1-5, and Deuteronomy 8:1, according unto the word of Elohim unto Solomon, at the dedication of his temple, 1 Kings 9:4-7. For the only ones whom the Elohim will allow to stay in the promised land are those who walk in his statutes and keep his commandments. Revelation 15:3 reveals that the song of Moses and the Lamb, which is the law of Moses, Deuteronomy 31:19-30, are the law of the Elohim, Nehemiah 8:1-8, is the law which governs the new covenant. These concrete facts make us realize and know the truth, thus we can understand why Yahshua said unto the woman at the well, you worship, you know not what. We know what we worship, the salvation is of the Jews. John 4:22. Who would know better than the Yahshua himself, being a Jew and following the Jewish religion? And why Paul says in Romans 3:1-2, what advantage then hath the Jew, or what profit is there of the circumcision? Much every way. Chiefly because that unto them were committed the oracles of the Elohim. Who would know better than Paul himself, being a Christian Israelite of the tribe of Benjamin, Romans 11:1, these oracles should not be strange unto an Israelite today or to any Bible Christian, seeing that he handed them down from generation to generation. And then Rollis Johnson goes on, I'll repeat this again. He handed them through Adam, Enoch, Noah, Shem, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, okay, Moses, Joshua, all the prophets, Yeshua, Messiah, the apostles, the Jews, Paul, and myself. Now, Brother Johnson is an Esauite, and Yahweh never made a covenant with Jacob's brother. He made a covenant with Jacob for a law. I just read to you, Jacob was one of these here main of prophets that had the law confirmed unto him. But he didn't confirm it unto Esau. So Verus Johnson handled the law. He got the first privilege to raise up the tabernacle. And he was given an opportunity to become the president of the Republic of Texas when it came into being in 1996. And he deferred that to his derelict son. Verus Johnson avoided these situations. He only wanted to be somebody that could rest on his knees. When he moved back to the desert in West Texas, where he was raised up and used to live back in the 30s and 40s, and they owned property there and houses, they owned their own home. They had it all rented out. So it was just a matter of going back home and find his house empty to move back in. And so when he did, he didn't like the idea at first, but after he did, he retired and he resigned himself to finish out his life out there. And he didn't have the desire to move on with the church or anything. And sure enough, he was given an opportunity. He made this journey down here at least four times that I know of, where we're at, which is about 400 miles due east of Kermit. Back during the 90s and early 2000, he made at least four or five trips down here to spy out the land and decided that Yahweh told him that you're supposed to move here. But yet, when he came to do it, he just couldn't make the decision to do it. He said we were too old, we can do everything we can. We need to do here on computers, we don't need to move it to anywhere else. We've got all our property paid for here. And so he just wanted to rest on his knees, as Zephaniah said, settle on his knees, and that's what he did. So when Yahshua came to visit him at the Passover 2002, what did he do? He said, well, you're an old, tired, wore-out workhorses. You're the lead team of this church, number four church, the Adventist church. You're connected to the bay horses. They're younger and stronger. You're an old wore-out team. You're tired. You're ready to be turned out to pasture. So Yahshua just hooked that grizzled team ahead of horses. Team of horses, he unhooked them from the wagon, and he turned them out to pasture. But Verus Johnson goes on to say here, for we are his workmanship, created in Yahshua Messiah unto good work. Who is who is he talking to now? He's saying that the Gentiles, that he and the Jews are his workmanship. Okay. But Elohim hath before ordained that we should walk in them. Wherefore remember that ye being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh, made by hands, that at that time you were without Yahshua, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without Yahweh in the world. Okay, Ephesians 2:10-12. Here we see Paul opening up the plan of the salvation unto the Gentile through the apostolic Jewish church to fulfill the words of Yahshua Messiah. Salvation is of the Jews. Paul made it plain to the Gentiles that without this plan and without them becoming a part of the commonwealth of Israel and being strangers to the covenants of promise, they were without Yahshua, they were without Yahweh, and without hope in the new covenant world. Paul, a prophet unto the Gentiles, was called to teach both Jews and Gentiles the gospel of the Yahweh written in the Old Testament, but in a new covenant setting. In other words, he was to teach the plan of salvation to the new covenant sanctuary system. See Hebrews 8:1-5. Thus Paul was trying to show that Elohim had one plan of salvation for both the Jews and Gentiles, in which they Jews were always talking about the tribe of Judah, the house of David, and that you could no longer obtain salvation through the death of a sacrifice, but that you had to go through the new and living way with the Yahshua Messiah as the high priest administering his own blood through the heavenly sanctuary system, Thus, through the sprinkling of the blood of Yahshua Messiah, we obtain a remission for and blotting out of our sins today, as is recorded in the Hebrews 8:1-5, Hebrews 9:12-22, and Hebrews 12:24 and 1 Peter 1:2. This plan was highly successful, for on the day of the Pentecost, 3,000 Jews accepted Yahshua Messiah in the apostolic Jewish religion, and then daily, such as should be saved, Acts 2:41-47. But the church went steadily forward under the power of the Holy Spirit until the Dark Ages. But when we look at the other side of the coin, we see a sad one. The religious leaders of that day rejected their Messiah because they had a misapprehension of the role he had come to act out. They were looking for a king, and when they saw him, a babe in a manger, the son of Joseph, a carpenter, one of no rank or authority, they rejected him, regardless of the fact that he was well learned in the scriptures and exhibited great wisdom before the religious leaders at the age of 12, and though he did many good works and miracles to heal and feed people, to them he was an impostor, a blasphemer. Thus he was tried before Pilate, who, in the spite of being convinced of his innocence, was influenced by the Jewish mob and condemned him to be crucified by the Roman Gentile. Matthew 20:19. Soldiers. Satan blinded the eyes of the leaders of that day, just like he does today, and through that blindness they were unable to see that Yahshua was the Messiah, as had been foretold by the prophets. Prophetic events fulfill. Therefore the Yahweh himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel, Isaiah 7:14. If this prophecy had been kept fresh in the minds of the church leaders, then they would have recognized the babe in the manger, born in Bethlehem in 4 B.C., as the birth of the Emmanuel, the son of a virgin. The baby Messiah, 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon the holy city, to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins and to make reconciliation for iniquity and to bring in everlasting righteousness and to seal up the vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 3 score and 2 weeks, Daniel 9:24-25. Since the church leaders had lost sight of this prophecy, they did not recognize in the baptism of Yahshua Messiah by John the Baptist, and in the Holy Spirit descend upon him like a dove, for the anointing of their Messiah, see Matthew 3:13-17. The Yahweh the Elohim will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee, of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him shall ye hearken. I will raise him up a prophet from among their brethren, like unto thee, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. Deuteronomy 18:15-18. If the knowledge of this prophecy had been kept before the church leaders in the Yahshua's day, then they would have recognized in the wisdom of the words, works, and miracles of Yahshua a prophet raised up in their midst. And I said, Brother John said, if the knowledge of this prophecy had been kept before the church leaders in the Yahshua's day, well, those church leaders in Yahshua's day were all Esauites. They had come in and usurped the throne of David at Jerusalem, were running the temple. They had never accepted Yahshua. And Brother Johnson is saying that the knowledge of this prophecy had been kept before the church. Well, they claimed to have Moses to their prophet. They said Abraham was their father. Yahshua said, if you'd have believed Moses, you'd believe me, for he wrote of me. So they didn't have this kept before them. Brother John says the knowledge of this prophecy had been kept before those Pharisees those scribes and Sadducees, in other words, leaders in Yahshua's day, then they would have recognized in the wisdom of words, works, and miracles of Yahshua. Ha! That's a false statement right there. That is totally wrong. They weren't predestined. They accepted the one rose from the dead, and that's what the scripture said. And that's what Yahshua said. They wouldn't believe it if one rose from the dead. So how are they going to believe if you kept that prophecy before their eyes? Sound like somebody's guilty of not keeping that prophecy before their eyes. Okay, they're the one that said we had no need of any of that stuff. Let us go on. This is Rhodes talking. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of Elohim and afflicted, but he was wounded for our transgression. He was bruised for our iniquity. The chastisement of our peace is upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one unto his own way, and the Yahweh hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He is brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is dumb, so he openeth not his mouth. Isaiah 53:47. And after the 80 years shall the Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with the flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many. Now this many and the covenant that was confirmed is with the house of David. And the many is the 144,000. Okay, in the 12th hour. And for one week and in the midst of the week, he shall call the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Alright. Well, the sacrifice and oblation ceased in the house of Esau of Mount Gilead in 2002. It ceased at the atonement, 2002. That was in the midst of the week, an antitypical seventh, that seventh this week. That's found in Daniel 9:26-27. If these prophecies had been known and kept up with by the leaders of the church in Yahshua's day, then they would have recognized in the crucifixion of Yahshua in AD 31 that he was the Lamb of Elohim who had been led to the slaughter. That he was the Lamb, the Messiah. The Messiah that had been foretold by the Daniel the prophet to be cut off in the midst of the 70th week. For he was sent of Elohim to die for the sins of those who lived under the old covenant. Thus he finished the transgression, made an end of sins, made reconciliation for iniquity, and brought an everlasting righteousness unto the faithful believers under the old covenant by his death on the cross. Daniel 9:24-27. Now keep in mind that this is all a type. We repeated that with Gilead Center, that midst of the week in 2002. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass, Zechariah 9:9. Now, who is this thee that this here king is coming unto? He was coming unto Jerusalem. He's coming unto the temple where the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the scribes were in charge of, the house of Esau. Says, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. This is the house of David. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. This is still the house of David. Jerusalem represents all 12 tribes put together. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He cometh unto the house of David. He is just in having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. Zechariah 9:9. With the knowledge of this prophecy being lost under the church leadership in that day, they did not recognize in the triumphant entry of the Yahshua into Jerusalem riding upon an ass, the king, or their king, the prophet of the Nazareth who was to be their high priest. Neither did they recognize the call that he made unto the daughter of Jerusalem and announced that he was the king of the daughter of Yahusha, Matthew 21:1-11. Thus they were unaware that he had rejected the mother church, Jerusalem, because the mother church had rejected him. The mother church today was Gilead Center. Brother Johnson did not know Yahshua had rejected them when he came to the threshold of the house at Passover night. He didn't know that Yahshua came to show his rejection of mother by cutting the lead team loose from the chariot with the grizzled horses and spearing the angel of the seventh candlestick out, let us say. The leader did not know that. And that he had chosen the daughter of Jerusalem, antitypical Elijah David, and the everlasting kingdom of David. This is the daughter of Jerusalem, to be the church through whom he would carry forth his work of the salvation on this earth. As you well know, there were a lot of unforgivable crimes inflicted upon Yahshua by the leaders of the mother church of that day, because of all the hatred that had been built up against him. I represented Yahshua. I was Yahshua's representative at Kermit 2002. And the hatred that had built up against me was so intense, you could cut it with a knife. It was so thick in the shirt. And so they persecuted the daughter church when it was brought forth. So when the daughter church, the house of David, came forth in 2002, it was derided, condemned, persecuted, cut asunder, given, pronounced a death decree upon it. When it was brought forth. Thus, in spite of all the prophets Elohim has sent to them, many of which I have shown in this tract concerning his coming, manner of coming, the events surrounding his life, and the miracles which he performed, they still couldn't see the light, and so they were without excuse, and because of this, the rejection of him and the wrongs which they committed, he made the following declaration. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. Matthew 23:38. This prophecy was literally fulfilling Yahshua died on the cross at the time of the evening sacrifice, 3 p.m. And the veil of the temple between the two apartments of the earthly sanctuary was rent in the twain from the top to the bottom, Matthew 27:51. And the sacrificial lamb escaped 40 years later in 70 A.D. Jerusalem, and the earthly sanctuary were completely destroyed, and every Jew who was not a Christian followed Yahshua was destroyed with it. This is the end type of the closing work of the Adventist church, when she's judged by those Ezekiel 9 judgment of the man and woman. And the whole Adventist church is every one of them profess, call themselves spiritual Hebrew Israelite, who were not a Christian, follower of the Yahshua, was destroyed with it. So that leaves 100% then of the Adventist church, once 144,000 has come forth out of her midst. And that would give me 100%. That's reading why Ezekiel 9, he cried out, "Will you destroy all the residue of the house of Israel?" And yes, Yahweh says, "Yes, every last one." And every Christian, Jew, and Gentile fled out of Jerusalem and Judah 6 months before Titus and his Roman armies came back for the second siege against Jerusalem, at which time they captured and burned the city, and 1,200,000 plus Jews lost their lives. When I said plus, he grew up to 1.5 million on that one. After his baptism, Yahshua called forth the 12 disciples and established the apostolic church known as the daughter of Jerusalem with the stone of Stephen at 34 A.D. By the church leaders, the 70-week prophecy of Daniel 9:24 and 27 came to an end. Thus, the mother church, the Jewish nation, was no longer Elohim's special people, for their probation had closed, and the executive judgment for her was meted out 36 years later with the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D. Okay, so now, the mother church today, probation closed for her, 2002 at the Atonement, Gilead Center. Closing out, and the next thing left for her is her executive judgment to be carried out, and no doubt it will be carried out with the wicked at the end of the world. Okay. This says, well, actually we had the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 A.D., 36 years after probation closed for the Jewish church at the cross. Okay. Or 3.5 years beside the cross, when that 70th week was up. So today, when the antitypical 70th week was up again, was in 2002, for the Adventist church. That's when she was, actually 3.5 years after 2002. Of course, 2002 was the antitypical mystery of the week, and there's 3.5 years left to go. So, when Daniel Johnson went and joined the Adventist Church in 2003, and he was kicked out by my sister and the ringleader of Advent, ringleader of the Adventist here in Odessa Church in 2006, and she called me and she said, he was here exactly 3.5 years. Now, how did my sister know that? She kept the exact track of how long he was there. I told her on the phone, I said, well, that closes out a 7-year period for Gilead Center. And I said, our probation has officially closed then for the Adventist Church. So you'd say that 3.5 years after 2003, sometime in 2006, was when that vision of Sister White had and the Testimonies, Volume 3, where she said on page 266, 267, the closing work of the Adventist Church is sealed 144,000. Okay. Let's continue on. Thus, with the stone of Stephen, the title, for the congregation of the living Elohim. Now, this is what we're talking about. The congregation of the living Elohim was transferred from the mother, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, to the daughter of Jerusalem, the house of David. So, the Apostolic Jewish Church. So the Apostolic Jewish Church in the type was of the house of David. And it was transferred from the mother church back then that was of the house of Esau. The Pharisees were of the house of Esau. They were descendants of Esau. Okay, same thing today. The Adventist Church are the descendants of the Pharisees, which are nothing but Edomites. They're Esauites. And so as I showed up in 2002 with Antipater Esau in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, with Jacob waiting to get the birthright transferred to him. Let's go on. For this organization was made up of the Christian Jews and Christian Gentiles. In other words, of the apostolic Jews with the disciples and the apostolic Gentiles. An apostolic Israelite and a servant of the living Elohim, I'm here to tell you, that my aim in writing this tract is not to point out, point a condemning finger at our forefathers, but to introduce and exalt Yahshua the Messiah as the son of the living Elohim in the eyes of the Jews today, and to show him as the Lamb of Isaiah 53, the Emmanuel of Isaiah 7:14, the anointed Messiah of Daniel 9:24-27, the prophet of Nazareth of Deuteronomy 18:15-18, and the prophet and king of Zechariah 9:9. Okay. Now, that's saying an awful lot. Now, Brother Johnson in 1971 at the Clarion Call at the Old Mount Carmel in Waco, Texas, Passover, he called up the Rodens to be a wave sheaf offering, to come and join him and become the wave sheaf offering that year. And so they put him on the hot seat for 5 hours, starting 8 o'clock in the morning. And he was there until 1 o'clock that afternoon, standing up there in one place. And they was asking him, are you a new prophet with a new message? If so, what is your name and what is your identity and what is your message? He said, I'm here to lift Christ up, Jesus Christ up in the law. He said, he's the leader of my organization. Well, here he is in 1998 writing this track, and now he's declaring it again. 27 years later, here he is writing this track, and he said, I'm here to say that my aim in writing this track is not to point a condemning finger at our forefathers, and that would be the Adventist Church, and the Davidians, the Shepherd Rock, and to point out and exalt Yahshua the Messiah as the Son of the Living Elohim in the eyes of the Jews today. And who are the Jews? They're the Judaites of the house of David. And so the house of David is represented by Elijah David in his midst at the time that he was reading this tract to us. And he was representing antithetical Esau. He was an Esauite in charge of the candlestick and of the temple, the same as the Pharisees were in their days. And to show him as the Lamb of Elohim of Isaiah 53. So he says, I'm here to lift Yahshua up, exalt him, the Son of the Living Elohim in the eyes of the Jews, the house of David. If you say Jews, you're talking about the tribe of Judah, the house of David. And to show him as the Lamb of Isaiah 53, the Emmanuel of Isaiah 7:14, the anointed Messiah of Daniel 9:24-27, the prophet of Nazareth of Deuteronomy 18:15-18, and the prophet of the king of Zechariah 9:9. Okay, if this is so, then how did he not recognize Yahshua when he showed up at Brother Johnson's Passover 2002? How come if Brother Johnson had recognized him 4 years earlier in this tract, how is it he didn't recognize him when he came to visit him in 2002? Let's continue. Satan has successfully used the so-called Christian world to condemn the Jews. Okay, so the Adventist Church had joined the Christian world, and they're condemning the 144,000 that is in their midst by falsely recognizing them, because the Adventists won't recognize them as 144,000 individual members of their church. They say that they're a symbolical group of all ages that have to be resurrected, most of them. So they're not even recognizing 144,000 as being of their membership. You see? So it says, by calling them Christ killers. Thus he has turned almost the whole world against them. While it is true, to a point, that the Jews did play a major role by condemning him to death, and by influencing Pilate to deliver him to be crucified, at the same time, the Gentiles also had a major role in the crucifixion, for we read. Now, I want to point out something here. So, what Brother Johnson is saying here, thus he had turned almost the whole world against them, Satan, while it is true to a point that the Jews did play a major role in condemning unto death, and by influencing Pilate to deliver Yahshua to be crucified. Now, what's the talking about here? He said the Jews. No, the Hebrew Esauites. Now remember, Esau had a Hebrew father, Isaac. So the Esauites are called Hebrews, just like the Hebrew Israelites of the Judaites of Judah are called Hebrew. They all have a Hebrew father. Okay? But they don't all have a Hebrew mother. I'll tell you that right now. Now watch this. So who was that helped partially condemn Yahshua to death? He said the Jew. No, it was a Hebrew Esauite, not the Hebrew Israelites of the Judah. Because Esauites had come in and usurped the throne of Judah, the house of David, and had taken over the house of David. And it was those Jews, those Hebrew Esauites. Okay, Gentile had a major role in his crucifixion. As Yahshua going up into Jerusalem took the 12 disciples apart in the way and said unto them, Behold, we go up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man shall be betrayed unto the chief priests and unto the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death, and shall deliver him unto the Gentiles to mock and to scourge, and to crucify him, and the third day he shall rise again. Matthew 20:17-19. Who was Judas, the betrayer? He was a Hebrew Esauite that would never be born again. All your Esauites are only the firstborn, but they will never be born again of the Spirit. That's the reason why Yahshua said to Nicodemus there in John 3. Yeah, Nicodemus come inquiring. Nicodemus was a Hebrew Esauite. Or he was, I'll take it back. Nicodemus was a Hebrew Israelite that had joined the Hebrew Esauites and was raised up in their rabbinical school and became one of the greatest teachers in Jerusalem in his day. And he was a good man. But he was a descendant to Isaac, and that's what made him a Hebrew Israelite that was a member of the Hebrew Esauites and their schools that he went through. That's the reason he converted when Yahshua told him, you got to be born again of the Spirit and the blood, the water and the blood. He says, how you do that? Yahshua showed him how. He accepted that and became born again because he was of the seed of Isaac, not Esau. He was the seed of Isaac, not of the seed of Ishmael. Because Isaac, the father of Esau and Jacob. So, Nicodemus was one of those lost sheep of the house of Israel. But he was a teacher in Israel. That's when he sought Yahshua out by the Spirit. He acknowledged him and accepted him. From this we see that both Jews and Gentiles are equally guilty of the death of the Messiah. But we do not have to continue on carrying the guilt of our forefathers. We can do something about it. We can do as Daniel and Nehemiah did. For they sought the Yahweh Elohim with the prayer, supplications and fasting, confessing the iniquities, disobediences and failures of their forefathers and themselves, and asking Elohim to forgive them. And it worked for Elohim, heard their prayers and forgave them. You can read about this in the Daniel chapter 9 and Nehemiah chapter 1. For the Daniel's prayers and supplication stand as a memorial of a finished work of the 70 years of the Babylonian captivity. For the results that came from the Nehemiah's prayers and supplications also stand as a memorial of a finished work in his time. His leave of the absence from the palace and his work in the rebuilding of the wall around Jerusalem and its gates resulted in the restoration of the divinely ordained system of the worship, void of the heathen interference. These facts show the necessity of prayer in a crisis and the power of prayer. Henceforth, the example of these two great leaders stand as a monument of success to both Jews and Gentiles today. So let us get our prayers, supplications, and fastings going for the sins of our forefathers, that they may be forgiven, and we can get on with the unification of the Gentiles with the Jews and all the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, what is wrong with what I just read? Brother Johnson is teaching the doctrines of the Catholic Church here. He says, so let us get our prayers, supplications, fastings going for the sins of our forefathers. Well, the sins of our forefathers have already been accounted for. They've already been judged. You don't pray for the dead, and you don't pray for your, and that's who you'd be praying for. that Yahweh forgive the sins of our forefathers that have already gone on. Their sins had to be taken care of before they died. Once a person dies, you don't pray for them no more. That's what the Catholic Church did. Right, let us go on. Unification of the Jews. Now, when I say Jews, I'm talking about the house of David. I'm not talking about those Hebrew Esauites. Unification of the Jews and Gentiles by the law. For the effecting of this unification, we would have to establish some guidelines built upon the facts that the law and the testimony in Isaiah 20, the central figure in this unification and in the plan of the salvation is Yahshua Messiah, and so we must establish he, who it is, where he came from, and what is his doctrine. If we can establish these three things and agree upon them, then we will have unity. This will be a major undertaking due to the fact that the Jews and Gentiles are miles apart on their religious belief. What Jews? It's the Esau Jews. It's the Hebrew Esauites. And who are the Gentiles? They're the descendants of the Hebrew Israelites, brethren to the Hebrew Israelites, through the lineal descendant of Isaac, and come on down through Moses and David, and right on down to our day. For the Jews have the covenants of the promise. Yeah, the Hebrew Israelites, not the Hebrew Esauites, not the Pharisees, not the Sadducees. Brother Johnson was not in charge of the... Yes, he was in charge of the covenants of promise, because he had the birthright. Until his birthright was challenged, and he lost it, the Antipas Esau, or Esau on the top, was in charge of the covenants of promise. Until he was tested and proven on his fidelity to his birthright, and he lost it, then the covenants of promise is no more his to have. He was given the covenants of promise to make good, to see if he couldn't do the same thing that the prophecy called for Jacob to do. For the Jews have the covenants of the promise, or doctrines, which are, number one, the Ten Commandments. Each table of the stone written with the finger of the Yahweh are void of the so-called chains of the fourth and tenth commandments by the man of sin. Number two, the law of Moses or the plan of salvation. Unfortunately, the Jews do not accept Yahshua Messiah as the Lamb of the Elohim. The Emmanuel, the Messiah, and the High Priest who has already come and is interceding for us today. But if this is true for us today, if this is true for Mount Zion at the 11th hour, the daughter of Jerusalem, okay, then he wouldn't have betrayed then the Messiah. And the only reason he betrayed him because he didn't really believe that he could do what he claimed that he could do, or what he had done already by miracles. He didn't believe those either, apparently. Alright, on the other hand, the Gentiles believe in Yahshua Messiah, but they are without the covenants of promise or doctrines. Why? Because it was given unto the Jews. That's what it says in Hebrews 3, I believe. What does Vanishing have to do? Much in every way, because unto him were committed the doctrines of the oracles of the sanctuary. Let us continue. For they only believe in the nine of the Ten Commandments and substitute the first day Sunday for the seventh day Saturday. And neither do they follow the Lamb of on the law of the Moses, which without the sacrifices is the plan of the salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua. Also, they do not accept the sanctuary system with Yahshua Messiah as our high priest. Apparently, Gilead Center didn't either. Or she wouldn't have been bringing vain oblations and committing all them abominations that Isaiah chapter 1 charged her with, as I read to you in my earlier study. Anyway, it says a great high priest in Genesis 2:2. Genesis 2:2 is talking about the seventh day Sabbath and 3. Reveals to us that in the beginning Elohim worked 6 days and rested the seventh day, blessed and sanctified it. Exodus 20 verse 8 commands us to remember the Sabbath day, the seventh day to keep it holy. So if this is true, then why didn't Rhoda Johnson stand up in the pulpit every Sabbath and tell the congregation, you're not keeping the Sabbath according to Genesis chapter 1 and 2 and Hebrews chapter 3 and 4. You're not keeping the Sabbath, and according to Isaiah 58:13. He would have told us that if he was really conscious about that, how we should keep the 7 day Sabbath, because none of us was keeping it right. We were observing it, taking it off, believing in it, but we weren't being sanctified by our complicit obedience unto it. Let us go on. And he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments. See? So, and he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform. Okay, so we were commanded to keep the 10 commandments. We was commanded to keep all those other statutes of the sanctuary. It says so in John 15:10. Yahshua said himself to the disciples, if you love me, keep my commandments. So that, if you love me, you will abide in my love. No, you know, if you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I've kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So he said, if you keep my commandments, you'll abide in my love. Well, apparently, Gilead sinners stopped keeping his commandments because Yahshua come and spew them out and cut them off. So apparently they stopped keeping his commandments because they didn't love him. Well, they accused him earlier of delaying his coming. 2003, they accused him of delaying his coming. Brother Johnson accused him of delaying his coming back in 1974. Because he wanted to come in 1974, and Yahshua didn't show up, so he said, well, he delayed his coming. That's what he told me. And he wrote down upon 2 tables of stone, Deuteronomy 4:13. For this points out that the 10 commandments written upon the 2 tables of stone by the finger of the Elohim is Elohim's covenant. For the record in Hebrews 4:1-9 reveals that Yahshua did not give us another day of worship, but that the seventh day was and still is the day of rest Elohim gave unto us. Thus it still remains as a day of the worship ordained from the beginning. For unto Yahweh I change not, therefore you sons of Jacob are not consumed, Malachi 3:6. Thus we know Elohim never changes. My covenant will I not break, nor alter the thing that has gone out of my lips. Psalms 89:34. Elohim never breaks his covenant. The other thing is, apparently, but the house of Israel breaks his covenant. Seventh day Adventist broke his covenant, did the final breaking of it in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. And he had to renew the new covenant in Hebrews 8 with his anointed chosen vessel, Antipatrical David. Okay. Upon these facts, I would have to say that in order for the Jews and Gentiles to be in harmony with the Bible and with the Elohim, they would have to accept and obey all of the 10 commandments given by Elohim unto Moses while he was in the mount, and there can be no alteration. Well, now what's wrong with all that? He needs to go on and say, yeah, and that includes all of the statutes and judgments and holy days of the sanctuary mentioned in Leviticus 23, for the seventh day Sabbath is the first one mentioned, and all the rest of those holy days that are binding upon Israel, as long as they're the seed of Israel and a generation of Israel. Okay, in the Genesis, chapter 3 and 4 is the record of the fall of man and the setting up of the sanctuary system with the plan of salvation that has a law, blood and high priest system. Okay. And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them, according to all that I show thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the instruments thereof. Even so shall ye make it. Exodus 25:8-9. This pattern sanctuary shown unto Moses by Elohim was to be the place where Elohim would dwell among them, and the plan of the salvation would be carried out by the man according to the law of blood and high priest system. Leviticus 23 and Deuteronomy 4:14 and Deuteronomy 31:19, 26 and 30 brings to our attention the statutes and judgments and the law or song of Moses, which with the blood and high priest system makes up the plan of salvation, the ordained system of the true worship, through the blood of the everlasting covenant, I might add. All of these are part of the everlasting covenant that the Elohim made with Abraham. Genesis 17:17. Now notice I've added the blood of the everlasting covenant and so forth. And then Reverend Johnson said all of these. But he didn't mention all of these. I mentioned all of these. For he has remembered his covenant forever. The word which he commanded unto 1,000 generations, which covenant he made with Abraham, and his oath unto Isaac, confirmed the same unto Jacob for a law, and unto Israel for an everlasting covenant, according unto Matthew 1:17. There were 42 generations from Abraham unto the cross. Thus that leaves us 958 generations of those 1,000 generations at this side of the cross, proving without question that we are still under that everlasting covenant today. Okay. Well, yes, the house of Israel is under that everlasting covenant. It's the purified house of Israel that's under it. It's not the sinful kingdom that's under it, that Amos 9 talks about. Jeremiah 31:31-33. Well, we're getting close to end of our study this hour. I think I'll reserve that part for us for our next study. We're going to bring this here to a close after just a little bit of a review. Now keep in mind that the old covenant was still binding in the new covenant era with the apostatized house of Israel, because you had the descendants of the Pharisees, which was of the house of Esau, that had to continue on to the end of time. And they was always in charge of it, first be in charge of the covenant. That's reading he was in charge of it at the cross. And that's reading how when Esau and Jacob were born, Esau was placed in charge of it first, given the first shot. Likewise, in the last days, always the firstborn is given the first shot. Ben Roden was the firstborn, 15 years older than Rutus Johnson, when his call came. And so Rutus Johnson got the next call. And so then I was called after Rutus Johnson to join him, and Rutus Johnson was 21 years older than me. So the younger one is always the one to carry on the older one. Ben Roden succeeded V.T. Holliff and carried on the rod message. And then Rutus Johnson succeeded Ben Roden to carry on the Isaac Branch message. And the next feeding pastor, Elijah David now, the younger, is carried on, called upon, carried on the present truth into the 12th parabolic hour, and to bring in everlasting righteousness, to fulfill Daniel 9:24-27, with Yeshua sanctifying the house of David to accomplish this act. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. Brightly beams our Father's mercy, let the lower lights be burning. Brightly beams our Father's mercy, and His light house evermore. But to us He gives a keeping of the lights along the shore. Let the Lord lights be burning, send a beam across the way. Some poor faint in struggling seamen, you may arrest you, you may say. Dark the night of sin has settled, loud the angry billows roar. eager heart of watching for me, for the lights along the shore. Let the Lord lights be burning, send a flame across her way. Some poor faith in struggling seamen, you may rescue, you may save. When your feet, oh, let my brother, some poor sailor tempest tossed, trying now to make the harbor, in the darkness may be lost. Let the Lord lights be burning, send a gleam across the way. Some poor faint in struggling seamen, you may rescue you.